Hello and welcome to Yes Indeed Pod, a podcast about indie tabletop roleplay games where I interview creators about their games and inspirations and about the theory, process and practice of game design. My name is Mark Shepherd, a game design enthusiast, roleplaying game editor, indie hustler slash promoter and interview podcaster. You can find me on Twitter at IamFofos and on itch.io at blue-golem-games.itch.io. As part of Kickstarter ZineQuest 2, all this month I'm interviewing game designers who are running Kickstarter campaigns to get their games into print. Today I'm interviewing Eli Seitz, a game designer exploring tabletop, LARP and the experimental space in between. His work can be found on itch.io and in the upcoming Dokkaid Jewish TTRPG anthology. Eli is running two ZineQuest 2 campaigns this month, Last Place on Earth, about the heroic age of exploration, and Fruit of Law, a freeform game about writing the rule of society by using and eating a pomegranate. Now that's out of my head and into yours, let's talk indie. So, today we're talking to Eli Seitz. Hi, Eli.
Hi, how's it going?
Would you like to explain a little bit about yourself and what you do in indie tabletop role-playing games?
Absolutely. So, my name's Eli Seitz. I use he, him pronouns, and I've been playing role-playing games for a long, long time, probably about 10 years now, since my early teens. And I've GM'd things, and mostly in the indie space, Powered by the Apocalypse. And I've been a member of The Gauntlet online for about a year now.
Oh, fantastic.
And recently, about 6 months ago, I started making role-playing games inspired by the Libra Baskerville Jam, to shout out Jared Sinclair of Indie RPG Twitter fame.
That is definitely a person to shout out to, yeah.
Yeah, but inspired by that section of Twitter and inspired by all of the amazing work coming out of Itch and Itch.io game jams, I started making small games and then was spurred on to making even larger games and inspired to make things for Kickstarter. I live in Boston, Massachusetts in the United States, and that we have a local role-playing game design meetup. And so meeting with other designers and talking with them has been really inspiring to see.
I'm very jealous. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's great to shout out more people. I'll shout out Lil Yobes, is the person who put that together, of the Brain Trust and Black Mass, which was on ZineQuest last year.
Okay, well, I'm very jealous because I don't have anything like that where I live. So kudos to you.
Just means you have to start it.
So speaking of ZineQuest, which we almost were, you currently have one game on ZineQuest and there's another coming out on the 18th. I think that's right.
Yes, absolutely. I am a crazy person who, when I read the ZineQuest write-up, when they said, once you'll run, your campaign will run for 2 weeks and then you can run another campaign afterwards, I thought, yes, that sounds like a good idea, that after 2 weeks of on Kickstarter, I'm going to run another one. So I have two projects coming out, one of which is on right now and one which will launch on the 18th.
These are your first Kickstarters, I guess.
Yeah, this is it. This is the first foray.
I'm very excited for you. I love Kickstarter. So yeah, congratulations, because I believe it funded day of launch.
Yeah, no, it funded very quickly. I turned off all of my Kickstarter notifications, which everyone should do who runs a Kickstarter, but I was informed that it funded within a couple hours. It's very exciting.
Oh, brilliant. And the second one, as I said, comes out on the 18th. Well, we haven't actually named either of them yet. The first one is Fruit of Law. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a really nice game. It's lovely. I would actually really like to play this, partly because I really like pomegranate. Tell us a little more, and then we can talk about how that game works, and then we can talk about the other one, which is Last Place on Earth.
Yes, yes. So the first game, which is ongoing right now, is called Fruit of Law, and it's that there's a story in Jewish folktale or folk tradition that the pomegranate fruit has 613 seeds, which represent the 613 commandments in the Torah, and that these commandments lay out everything that you could do in biblical times that you would do with your life. That the idea that you can't mix the meat with their mother's milk is one of these commandments, or that you can't eat the albatross, or that we need to recognize Passover because of, in these ways, because of this history, is all these laws that are in the Torah and in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
I was really struck by this idea that the pomegranate is a physical representation of all these laws. And I was thinking, what if you could use a pomegranate to write your own set of laws? And what would that mean for your society? And then, because I'm Jewish myself, my natural inclination with that was that, okay, now if we're going to write these, it can't be a solo thing. You have to write it with other people, and you have to argue about it, because there's another saying in Jewish tradition that if there are two Jews, there are three opinions. So the whole game is set up that we're going to, you know, split up in a pomegranate, and we're going to put the seeds forward in groups or signally, and we're going to put forward these laws in a structured way. But the laws will interact and contradict each other. And when we do that, we have to argue and figure out what's going on. What does that mean for our society? And try to break it down.
I think it's very clever. It's very succinct. It's a very short game, but it's lovely. And I can kind of see how it would bring out a very emergent narrative as you're going through this. It just feels like a very nicely written book.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, I mean, we've been alluding to it, but Fruit of Law is very condensed. It's what some people are calling a lyric game or a kind of poetry game. And the whole text makes up a single page. And that for the Zine Quest, what I'm really excited about is the idea that we could take that one page thing that appears a lot on itch.io, and it's these like little micro games, and turn it into a physical object that people could get. Because so much of those games that are so small just live on the internet, and everyone's idea of a role-playing game is these like larger books, either like the size of Apocalypse World or even larger in the form of D&D books that have that 12x8 format. And that like we could go back to these punk traditions of the zine and make a one page folded 8 book. And it's really cool that I'm going to do that, and we're going to put it in letters.
That 8 page booklet format, which you can fold yourself. I'm like, that's so cool. I just really like it. I'm sort of a bit of an origami nerd. Mm. So there you go. That's one of the things that I really like about Fruit of Law, is that it does have this very indie feel, because not only is it on a single page, basically, and half of it is a long form example, but you're not using a die. You're not using what you might consider to be standard RPG mechanics. You're taking a pomegranate. And the first rule in the book is procure one pomegranate, and that's pretty great. I don't think I've ever read role-playing games, save one perhaps notable example, which does require you to eat food. And it's very much what some indie is about at the moment. As you mentioned, lyric games, but it's a kind of game style which resonates with me as well, which is about breaking down traditional notions of what a role-playing game is. There's a lot of single-player or two-player lyric games. They're very short-form, they're quiet, they sort of express one or two moods, one or two emotions, rather than going the whole gamut of could talk about anything. They're very interesting and evocative and talk about very complex ideas quite simply.
Definitely. No, I very much enjoy reading, whether there's games like mine that are more about, this one is about kind of the society, but there's also a whole lot of really amazing games that are about deeply personal experiences that people will put forth in the game. And sometimes it's not even about so much the idea that you're going to play the game, but just reading it and thinking about how someone has written about their experiences in game form, and the feelings that they've put into their work really is where you can see games coming out as art and as art pieces and personal expression.
There are some really good players out there who are doing that sort of thing at the moment. So that's Fruit of Law, and it is very interesting, and it's got another 10 days to run on Kickstarter, I guess.
Honestly,
I encourage everybody to get it.
Definitely. And I would recommend anyone making small games on itch that running this Kickstarter has been very fulfilling, and that I think that more people should be looking towards this tradition, because it is so feasible to put these games out there, because I can offer worldwide shipping for free, which most people in ZineQuest cannot do, simply because I can print these small booklets and put them in a letter envelope and ship them anywhere in the world for $1.15 by US postage for an international letter.
And long may that continue, because it's an extremely wholesome way to get your games out there.
Absolutely.
And like receiving a letter, not a parcel, but a letter in the post that contains this game. I think like giving these as gifts to people would be amazing. I was just like, I'm very down with it. I think it's fantastic. Are you doing all of your own fulfillment? It's a question I'm asking to all of our zine questers.
Yes, I am doing all of my own fulfillment for both games, for this one included. But you can definitely expect as a backer update that we'll have pictures of the folding party, pizza included, that I'm going to get a bunch of friends together, and we're going to sit down with these printed pages and just fold about 100 games.
I think we should move on to talking about your other game.
Sounds good.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about Last Place on Earth?
Absolutely. So Last Place on Earth is about exploration in the South Pole and Antarctica. And it's about a specific expedition that went to Antarctica led by Robert F. Scott in the 1910s called the Terra Nova to be the first to reach the South Pole. Only he ended up having to race the Norwegians, and the Norwegians both beat him to the South Pole, and all of the people that Scott went with to the South Pole all died on the way back. This expedition is famous for all of the wrong reasons. It's famous because of all of the bad choices that he made that everyone can look back with hindsight and say, that was a terrible idea. Why did they do that? And that they had this goal that they failed to accomplish, and then that they didn't even make it home afterwards.
It's told in Britain as a kind of tale of valor and honor and very British values. But when you read a little bit more into it, you kind of see there's this huge hubris. And as I've been reading through the text, there's some massive red flags saying, why were you doing this? You're doing this for all the wrong reasons. You're doing it, I kind of hate to say it, but it was sort of inevitable that this was doomed to failure.
Yeah,
it's sad. It's a lot sadder than the English patriotism, jingoism kind of paints it to be.
Absolutely.
It's not a good story at all.
No. I mean, at one point, so it took me a little bit of research before I settled on this particular expedition, because if you're looking for amazing stories even in the South Pole, you're definitely going to probably look at Ernest Shackleton's expedition where everyone survives and they don't accomplish it, but they have this amazing story of surviving by the skin of their teeth and being innovative and having great leadership and holding the morale together. And it's so great that you're talking about it in terms of like the hubris and the things that made them go out there, because that's part of what draws me so much to this game. And that the Antarctic and the harshness of the conditions and the harshness of the expedition and the technical nature of it is really just backdrop so that we can explore these characters and think about what is driving them to go out there and what are they looking for and can they find it.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot of context and background information about this. Outlining the reasons why this did not succeed, I think, is one of the big pointers in this story.
That's definitely what I'm looking for.
This game is, I think, rather than a lyric game, we might call it a map game, which is another movement which has sprung up in the last few years. Do you want to kind of explain why a map is important to this game and what that means for the actual gameplay?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a couple map games, probably the most famous of which is Fall of Magic by Ross Kalman, and also The Quiet Year by Avery Alder are two of the most well-known map games in the indie space. And The Last Place on Earth also plays on a map. And the map is really important because it's what helps give you the sense of the journey, that you're in this expedition and we start on a boat in the polar sea on the edge of Antarctica. And we're going to advance along stations on the map all the way to the South Pole. And then we're going to see retracing our steps. And the mechanics will lead to that some people will make it all the way back to the start and some people might not.
Oh my gosh, I really have to talk about this kind of the extremely high level of lethality to this game.
Yeah.
I sat down and worked out the statistics of it last night, and it's like there is a very, very slim chance that all of you will survive.
Oh, for everyone, it comes out incredibly slim. For a single player, in how the math works out, you have about a 30% chance of making it through to the end.
That's a fantastic way to link up the foolishness of the situation and the harshness of the conditions that you're surrounded by. And yeah, it's one of those mechanics which just completely reinforces themes by being extremely simple. That level of lethality, you see it in a lot of other games like OSR games, but you don't necessarily see it in story games and map games. Like, yeah, I appreciate the way that that's been written. I think it's very slick.
Yeah, compared to OSR, one of the things that I wanted to bring out is that in a lot of time in OSR, sure, it's up to the dice in the end, but a lot of what it is about the smart decisions you're making to get there. And some of this is you can't really plan for it. The actual expedition came so incredibly close to surviving. The three remaining members of the expedition all starved to death in a tent 10 miles away from a depot with all of the food and supplies that they needed to finish the expedition. and that they were so close, and it was a blizzard and sudden drops in temperature that led them to not be able to make it. And sure, they made earlier choices that made the margin that slim, but just the idea that anything could happen is so interesting.
And it was appalling luck, really, that it did end that way. That kind of ties up with the way that you've presented this in terms of mechanics as well, that it is a lot of the deaths are just on a roll of the dice, or on roll of a die, which map games I've been very interested in since I first read through Fall of Magic and subsequently played it, and it's just a very nice, evocative way to play a game, because you've got that, you've got something in front of you, and it's something which everybody likes. Maps. I love maps. My day job is in maps and geography.
Oh, excellent.
So yeah, I'm very much into maps, but I think everybody likes maps. And like, if you have a map of a real place, if you have a map of Antarctica in front of you, and you can see, you know how big this place is, you know how big it is, and you're moving a piece between different points on a map, and then reviewing text and thinking about, oh, what's happened here? What could happen here? What scenes can I do? And then you're also looking at the scale of the map and thinking, well, I've just walked 1,500 miles across snow.
It's absolutely crazy. And I definitely want to recognize Eli Kurtz, who's done a fabulous job working on the art for this game, that he's in charge of the map. And it is absolutely lovely. We've got these inked drawings for the scenes that really set it up, and has done just a great job of really capturing the feel. And it's absolutely lovely. And to promo some of the campaign, that with the very first stretch goal is that I want to print the maps as posters, that 11 by 17 posters that will ship with the game.
Is there anything you want to talk about else about Last Place on Earth?
One of the really interesting things when I was approaching Last Place on Earth is that I was really interested in this idea of historical exploration and the crude gear that people were using and the technical nature. And as I was doing more research, I was originally looking at First Ascents on Mountains. And a lot of them, First Ascents on Mountains, become very problematic because of indigenous and native peoples that are in the area that help them and don't end up in the history books. And then after that, I turned my attention to the North Pole, which has similar, very fraught issues about people who are acting as guides and people who aren't giving credit. And that's how I ended up at the South Pole, that this is this story of exploration, and there is absolutely no one there. All that we have is we've got seals and penguins and these British people who are driven, and the Norwegians, who are driven to come here and do this thing. And that it's a really interesting way that me as a white male can talk about exploration and history and colonialism in this context, because I'm not telling someone else's story of oppressed peoples, that it's these are these people and they were driven by these ideals and it completely backfired and this is what happened to them. And this is how we can think about it in these ways that's unconnected from other people's suffering, because they chose to go out there and they died because of their choices. And I think that's really interesting to play the game and to think about how that all fits together and how that connects to toxic masculinity and how that connects to colonialism and how that connects to jingoism and just how that's still around.
I think that's right. And like, actually, that's really interesting that you can tell this story without it being a colonial story. When you read into the history of why people from Britain particularly wanted to explore the South Pole, you get into more sort of skeevy territory where you can't necessarily say that this wasn't about patriotism and jingoism. It was very much about, oh, we want to come here and we want to be the first to get there, because that's a very British thing to do. And
absolutely.
You do talk a little bit about how their clothing, for instance, they didn't want to wear furs, which the Norwegians did, because that's a sensible thing to wear when you're traveling in snow and ice, right? That seems like a good idea, because that's what the animals around you have, you know? but they didn't want to do that because there were negative connotations for them about how indigenous peoples in northern and southern climes would wear clothes like that. So they just wore what they wore all the time, which was not necessarily the best outfit.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's this one story that truly epitomizes just the kind of ideas about it, and the idea that they're approaching this with scientific logic, but it's so twisted, is part of the reason why that Robert Scott's expedition spent almost the entire time going to the South Pole on foot. And they pulled their sledge with 300 pounds of gear for over 600 miles of it, and they didn't make it back. And if they made it back, they would have been pulling it even longer. And the reason that they pulled it by foot instead of using dogs is because on a previous expedition, they decided that dogs were a bad idea. And their logic to come to that point is just completely epitomizes why they have these views that the dogs pulled the sled too fast and that the explorers couldn't keep up with the sled when it was pulled by dogs because they couldn't use skis because they thought that skis were a children's toy. And so they never practiced with them. So they couldn't keep up with the sled. And then in order to make the sled go slower when it was being pulled by dogs, they loaded it down with even more weight. And so the dogs are pulling double the amount to slow them down. And then the dogs were only fed the amount of food you would feed your dog at home and not a dog who's in the Antarctic hauling 500 pounds of gear. And all of the dogs died. And thus the explorers came to the conclusion that dogs are a bad idea and we need to haul this ourselves.
Despite like the Sami people of Finland using dogs to pull their sleds for thousands of years.
Exactly. Or the greatest explorer at the time telling Scott that the way to get to the South Pole is bring lots and lots of dogs. And they just ignored him.
Like I said, it's all just British hubris, which feels weird to say to somebody. But there you go. That's exactly what it is, isn't it? It's been very interesting. There's been quite a lot of talk about decolonialism in tabletop role-playing games changing those narratives. It's not a subject I personally feel comfortable talking about. And I can't say definitely that the games I write don't have that colonial narrative because I can't tell other people's stories. There's this feeling that classic tabletop role-playing games, and there are some very notable examples, somehow inherently have this narrative of you go out there, you beat up some monsters, and you steal their treasure. And that's very... you can kind of see quite quickly how that becomes a problematic storyline.
Absolutely.
When you take into account the people who wrote it. Again, whilst I'm not entirely comfortable making judgments about it, it's very interesting that now people are taking that to task and trying to take the colonial narrative out of tabletop role-playing games. What you're doing here is you're taking that colonialist narrative and saying, well, look, it was very flawed. There are huge problems with the way that the people approached this particular expedition because they had a us versus them mindset that came from their upbringing, came from their patriotism, their pride in the British Empire, and that was very, very foolish.
Absolutely. I think that, and part of this comes back to some of my background in social sciences, is that everything we do has subjectivity built into it and biases built into it. And it's impossible for us as members of Western culture to write a game that does not have colonialist values baked into it. And it's definitely nothing that I write is going to be truly decolonial. I am not the person that is able to deconstruct that. And I wouldn't call any of my games to be like, I'm able to fix colonialism. But I can, someone who's in it, I can comment on it and talk about it. And I think that's why we're here in the South Pole with these people who are by themselves with their attitudes, and their attitudes end up getting themselves killed, that this is the way that I can talk about it and point at it, and that as you play the game, and as you make your characters, and as they deal with these escalating circumstances in this incredibly harsh environment, you can see parallels between attitudes that still exist in present day, and how they bring us to situations that pull out the colonialist values and how they still affect us even today.
Yeah, I mean, there's all these Western countries that still have all this imperialism around them, and the more we can produce media and produce art that challenges those opinions, certainly the better. But as you said, we're definitely doing it from the inside of that system rather than the outside.
Absolutely.
So that is Last Place on Earth, which is on Kickstarter from the 18th of February until...
yeah, it runs for 2 weeks until March 3rd.
Okay. Please join me and back Last Place on Earth and also Fruit of Law while it's still running. So thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Eli, do you want to tell us a little bit about where we can find you on the internet and where we can find your other games?
Definitely. So you can follow me on Twitter www.thefirstgamepodcast.com, which is where you can stay up to date on any projects that I'm working on and see me occasionally getting in tweet conversations about the games that I'm playing elsewhere online. And you can find me on Twitter or at sites_Eli, which is really easy. And then you can find me on Itch, where you can see on Itch I have all of my games, including Fruit of Law and Last Place on Earth, will go there after the Kickstarters are done. In addition to, I've got a game about murder ballads and a game about space anthropologists and all kinds of great stuff.
They sound fantastic. Yeah.
You can find my Itch at Eli Sites. Same thing, nice and easy. And yeah, you can find Last Place on Earth on Kickstarter. It is only $8 for the PDF, or $4 if you are experiencing some financial hardship, and the print copies will be only $12 plus shipping. And Fruit of Law is a measly $5 wherever you are in the world for all digital and physical copies.
Big love for that. That's pretty great. Yeah, so Twitter, Itch.io, Kickstarter, those are the places we can find you. Fantastic. Anything else you want to talk about or promote while you're here?
I guess the only other thing to promote is everyone should keep looking at the Zine Quest page throughout the month. I know personally of some other amazing projects that are going to back. And definitely look at those smaller other games that maybe aren't modules or adventures and are someone putting out their personal truth and sharing some really personal art that they're bringing to the world. And you should support them because it only costs a couple dollars.
That is what Zine Quest is all about. That's what we're doing all month on Yes Indeed.
And I really appreciate that. It's so great.
We're talking about people's cool games. That probably wraps it up for tonight. So thank you very much to Eli.
Thank you for having me on. This has been really great.
Brilliant. I'll speak to you next time you've got something on Zine Quest.
Sounds good. Who knows? Maybe I'll be back next year with another tiny booklet.
I hope so. Thank you very much again. And go out and get those two games because they're great. Thanks again to Eli Sykes for the interview. Please check out his Kickstarter campaign for Fruit of Law now and for Last Place on Earth from the 18th. Every link and social media handle will be in the episode description. All of February is Zine Quest 2, a Kickstarter role-playing game event where loads of indie creators are running campaigns to get their games printed to zine format. It's an extravaganza of content and it's set to be a wild ride. To celebrate it, I'm doubling up on content and putting out an interview with a Zine Quester every single week. Next week, I'll be interviewing Duane Figueroa-Rosol, a game designer and artist whose game Deep Nightly Fathoms is on Kickstarter now. It's about exploring dark and dangerous dreamscapes, and it's inspired by the art of Gustave Doré. It's already funded, and the first stretch goal is editing by indie superstar Olivia Hill of hashtag iHunt fame, so go and check it out now and listen next week for the full interview. And Matt Bonhoff's game, Campfire Memories, is still on Kickstarter. Yep, it's funded too, but you could help get that full-colour PDF Matt promised last week. Get on it. Another little plug for my friend, official influencer Christopher Reynolds. During February, you can sign up for the third Akashicon X Ninja Hell Productions Anime RPG Design Contest, which takes place over 3 months and is open to all ages 13+. Find the details at the Akashicon website and at ninjahell.com/contest. If you enjoy Yes Indeed Pod, please subscribe wherever you find your podcasts, and of course reach out to me through Twitter at IamPhophos, that's IamPhophos. I'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. All music is from BitQuest by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and filmmusic.io. Thanks, Kevin. Until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.